Okay, good evening, Erev Tov. Coming into Pesach, please, got another week. As I mentioned last week, the interesting thing about the use of Aramaic, I just got the Haggadah recently of my Rosh Hashiva, Ron Gurvich, from Gateshead, who talks about Holach Ma'anya. It's an interesting thing. He says Holach Ma'anya, he says, is a kind of, how should we say, it's bringing the language and the discussion of the Jews of Egypt at the beginning of the Haggadah. They were all sitting around saying, Holach Ma'anya, this is the bread of affliction which our forefathers ate in Egypt, and we're still eating it, and we're leaving. Hashta Hacha, we're here now, Shana Bo, in next year in Eretz Yisrael. In other words, they thought they're going to be in Israel within a year. Turned out 40 years. Hashta Avdin, now we're slaves, and next year, obviously, when we get out of here, we're going to be free. So the question is, why in Aramaic? And the answer is, because if you're setting the scene of the Haggadah right at the beginning with this repetition of the language of the Jews of Mitzrayim, right, coming out of Mitzrayim, then the language which was spoken in the world before, let's say, we had Yiddish and other Ladinos and all these sort of popular languages from our world, the language was Aramaic. It was spoken for 1,000 years in the Jewish world, right through Babylon and beyond. Yeah.
They didn't speak that in Egypt,
but it's the idea of, for the Jew in the exile after the Second Temple, because the Haggadah clearly reflects the fact that, although we're talking about the Korban Pesach, we know that we're after that particular situation. So we're talking about the Jew to reconnect him to the original events. And this is much part of a bigger discussion, which I can't go into now, because that's a Haggadah shir, about the fact that Haggadah is reliving the whole event. A lot of people talk about that. The Rambam says, you should consider ki'ilu yatzata Mitzrayim ato, as if you left now. You're leaving Mitzrayim, right? And all of the things that we do at the Seder are really to recreate that sense of now. Everything's happening now. It's a recreation of an historical event in a modern context. Right, which is why, for instance, one of the reasons you don't say She'osanissin lava seni by Imim Ahem, Bazman Azeh, we're talking about doing miracles in those days, and we are reliving the miracle now. Right? So it's a strange thing. You know, in Purim we say She'osanissin, Chanukah, but why not on Pesach? The answer is because those are historical events of the past. This is a current event. Okay, and this is the same with Matan Torah. The idea is that it's a reenactment going through the whole experience all over again. Yeah.
I'm a little confused. We don't say Shas and Nisim on Pesach. We do on Purim and Chanukah.
Yeah. Because we're not reliving Purim and Chanukah now. We're just commemorating. Pesach is actually reliving. Pesach is recreating the events through the Seder, through the little games that we play. The father carries the matzah. Some kids, my grandchildren have got frogs on their fingers this year. I don't know what they're going to do with that. Be a wild Seder. Who knows? Right? You know, all of this is... with my grandchildren, especially the two boys. Who knows? Three boys. They may even produce some live frogs. Hopefully not. I'm not encouraging that at all. One thing last week, so I just wanted to mention that about the whole thing of Aramaic, because I thought it was nice just to sort of begin talking a bit about the Seder as well. One thing that I want to mention, I left for last week, is this incredible vision that we have of Nebuchadnezzar, which we spoke about last week. Again, the question is, why does God give this message of the four Malchiyot, the four kingdoms, which are going to eventually go through history, right, and going to dictate the experience, certainly our experience of Galut? Why is this message sent through Nebuchadnezzar? Why isn't it sent directly to Daniel? In fact, it is sent to Daniel later on. But why start with Nebuchadnezzar? Why give him the message? Right? And there's a lot of sefer. Yeah. Because, again, he's the first one, but it's even more than that. He's the non-Jewish king of the world. And if he gets this message, and he is told this, and he had then conveys it to everybody else, it's a wow. It's like, really, you know, Obama waking up one morning, palming saying to President Obama, and saying, oh, I had a message from God, and, you know, he wants to tell the whole world. Right? Whether he would do such a thing, I doubt it, but you never know.
I think it's in Nebuchadnezzar purposely to show him that, yes, you might think you're part of history, you might think you're this, but really, you're a great king, I'm made you.
Yeah. And this is it. You're just a pawn. And for him to realize that. And in fact, what Rav Ariel goes on about is the whole idea of determinism. He gets very philosophical here. Because this whole... this image that we have in chapter 2 and the dreams that we have later on are very deterministic. That means that they're kind of fixing the rules of the game before you've even had the game. Alright? You know, it's saying in advance what's going to be. We know that we believe in Bechira Chofshit, free choice. So the argument therefore is that no, when it comes to the rest of the world, they have to be told that this is your sort of tough gear, as it were, your purpose in the bigger picture of history, and Nebuchadnezzar has been given his purpose. Now, what does he do with it? And what does he do with this information is typical demagogue reaction. All right? Does he become totally repentant and go back on what he's been doing? The answer is absolutely not. And this is kind of strange to us. All right? People, I mean, again, you know, this famous thing that when Hitler was in the bunker, Hitler, Yimach Shemo, was in the bunker, and Berlin was just about to be destroyed. And almost his last words were, you know, that carry on the war against the Jews. Never would ever be able to go back on that particular, goal in life that he had, this terrible thing that became his whole focus in life, even when he's dying, even when he's just about to commit suicide. All right, and that, the Rambam says, people like Parham, Paro was the hardening of the heart, was a punishment, because he didn't deserve to be able to do tshuva. He was so bad, he was so evil, that the gift of tshuva was taken away from him. And the Rambam says in history there will be a number of characters like that, but Paro was the one that we know about from the Bible, and of course we can add sort of people like Nebuchadnezzar to it, and these types of people. Though again, the question is whether Nebuchadnezzar will qualify. You'll see what happens to him in the course of the story. So, we can get very philosophical here. We can get very sort of detached from the text and go into a whole discussion about determinism and free will, which I don't want to go into. You know, you can sort of listen to Lord Sachs on that, and I'm sure he's got lots of lectures which will explain all these ideas to you, because that's what he's into. He's a moral philosopher. That's what he does. But the reality of what's going on here is very interesting in chapter 3. All of that is by way of introduction to the next incredible story. Every perek, right through to chapter and through perek vav, is one incredible story after the other. It's the existence of the Jew in the galut, and nevertheless being able to survive as a Jew under the most oppressive conditions one could ever imagine. This is not a normal circumstance that's going to happen. Either that happened in perek bet, Daniel being elevated almost to the status of Yosef, the equivalent of Yosef in Mitzrayim, and now in Perek Gimel, where we know that the three friends were also given a high position, but Nebuchadnezzar is toying. At least there are elements in the Babylonian hierarchy who are going to be politically motivated to bring down what they call the Yehud, the Jew. Okay, and this is a word that we hear over and over again in the Arab world to this very day. Gimel, listen to this, chapter 3, and it's absolutely fascinating. I think there's a lesson here, Abe, of... the heart, the cup is half full and not half empty, right? You know, we Baruch Hashem. I think we've got a minion already. We're doing good. So there you go. It's yes, on a rainy night. It's really quite something. Why is this night different from all other nights? You know the famous story when Lord Jacobitz was given a knighthood by the Queen, and what they did was you have to say something, you know, as a response. So he'd forgotten the Latin expression, so he said something in Hebrew. So she's knighting him with the sword, and he says, Manishtana laila ze mikol halilot. So she turns around and says, why is this night different from all other nights? It's an old, but a very good joke. Sorry about that. I couldn't resist. All right, that's a joke for the Seder table. Gimel, listen to this. My family have heard all these jokes so many times, they groan. Nebuchadnezzar Malka, we're back into the Aramaic. So hear this, chapter 3, I don't know what page it's on. Perek Gimel? 19. Okay. Nebuchadnezzar Malka. This again is a wild story. Nebuchadnezzar the king, Avad Selem Didav. Remember the whole image that he was shown, gold at the top, and then it went down in metal value, if you want to say, silver, and then bronze, and then eventually to earthenware, to almost to nothing. So Nebuchadnezzar took the image and he said, I'm going to make an image which is going to be even more spectacular, right? Rather than giving in to the message, he wants to overcome it. So look what he tries to do. Nebuchadnezzar Malka, Avad Salem Didav, he made an image completely of gold. Rume Amin Shitin, 60 Amon. 60 Amon is about 100 foot high. This is pretty serious, image, presumably of himself, right? Patye Amin Shtei Shit Akime Bebikat Dura B'medin Abama. It was in the Bikat Dura, in the Valley of Dura, which probably still exists in whatever name they call it today. And it was 60 cubits high, and it was a width of 6 cubits, so it was 12 foot wide. This was a serious piece of gold, okay, in the form of an idol. And what did he expect? One thing you have to say about him, he's consistent in terms of his evil. Nebuchadnezzar, Malka, the Nebuchadnezzar the king, Shalach leMichnashla, and here we go. And some of the words you will actually recognize from the Megillat Esther. He gathers all together, Chashtar Panaya. All right, those who lay in the Megillah will know that word. It's the, what do they call it here? The satraps, whatever a satrap is. Siganim. Right, the here he says the prefects, the people who are second in command, upachvata, the governors, impossible words to pronounce, adar gzraya, this means actually the judges, gedavraya, it sounds almost Russian, right? Detavraya, tiftaya, all these different people, treasurers, counselors. I'm just reading the translation because it's all the choshev mention, right? Tiftaya are the sheriffs, right? I think of sort of Roy Rogers, but probably not that sort of sheriff. V'chol shiltonei medinta, all the medinata, all the leaders, the rulers of the various capitals of the empire. What is he doing? He's bringing them all. L'meitei l'chanukat salme. He's doing a chanukata tzelet. All right, we do Chanukata Bayit, and he does a dedication to the image. Unbelievable. Di hakem Nebuchadnezzar Malka, which he established. So bring them all, one and all, and they've all got to bow down to this image. Yeah.
Rashi seems to imply that he collected all the various Avodah
Zarah. And make it even more intense. Yeah, make it even more intense. A total and utter a statement that I am rejecting I recognize the God of Israel. They all said that. They would recognize the God of Israel, but they would not do anything more than a statement of recognition, but not anything in terms of cancelling their own self-image, be it that they were a Avodah Zarah or that what they were worshipping. Yeah.
Maybe he was bronze.
Sorry?
You start off with the base.
He might have been the bronze, but he's the gold. No, he is definitely... He's the gold. But it's fascinating. Look what goes on. Gimel. Badayan mitkanshin achashta panaya. And again, I've got to read all this over again. While they were gathering together, the signaya, pachvata, etc., etc. I'm going to even miss it out. Go along the line to the word v'chol. V'chol shiltanei medinata. All of these rulers, while they were gathering, l'chanukat salma, for this dedication, came Nebuchadnezzar Malka, which Nebuchadnezzar had set up. So they all came. The Kamin, the Kabel Tzom, and they were standing opposite. The Tzelem, came Nebuchadnezzar, which he had established. Alright, so they're all standing there. This is for want of a better word, one of the biggest Chilul Hashems in the ancient world. This is absolutely going against the concept of one God, and Nebuchadnezzar is fueling the fire. Okay, and again, it's interesting because the suggestion is this is taking place where the Migdal Bovel was. That is fascinating, right? The Tower of Bovel, what was that all about? Same idea, putting up a tower in order to fight God. They went to the tower, to the top, with swords, right, that they would fight God. And I remember when the Chamlivit spoke about it very often, she would say that one of the big lessons for us in the modern world is that they cried about a brick, and they didn't cry about a human being. Human fell off the tower, so another one lost, right? Bring another slave. A brick fell down, they started crying because they needed to bring up another brick, who knows how many floors. And of course, what does she say? She says, the modern world, unfortunately, this is what we come to. Okay, and she was talking 20, 30 years ago where, you know, the idea is that sometimes it's more important the technology than it is the human side of things. You know, you get now to a point where you make a phone call, you don't speak to a human being. I ordered water today for Pesach, right? You know, from the water company. did not speak to a human. I just went through like 10 different buttons to press and never ever spoke to anyone human. It was done, right? And it just occurred to me, you know, when I was preparing this, and I thought, wow, this is what Nechama spoke about, you know, sort of in her day, she was already seeing it happen. And she's gone now, what, nearly 20 years, but we take this for granted. It's really scary, the idea that, you know, we've pushed the human element so far away, or at least try to. I think it's coming back a bit because people realize sometimes, you know, this is not a healthy situation. But anyway, something to think about. Dalit. So what's going on over here? Ukoroza Karei Bechai. So of course Nebuchadnezzar is standing there. He's a bit of a showman, as you can imagine. And he makes an announcement. Kruz, machrizim in Hebrew. Lachon amrin amamaya umaya velishnaya. To you, O peoples of different nations and different tongues, different languages. Bidana ditishman kol karna mashrikit. Mashrukit in modern Hebrew is a whistle. And they translate it as like a sound of a horn, a whistling horn. All right, some sort of sound of a shofar. When you hear this sound of the whistling shofar and katros savcha pesantrim. Pesantrim in modern Hebrew is a piano. It's interesting. He says here the psaltery, the bagpipes. Right, whether you got any Scotsmen there, I really don't know. I doubt it very much with the kiln or without the kiln. But whatever it was, sumpanaya v'chozanim. Basically, you had like what we call in England the Grenadier Guards. The Grenadier Guards are the King's Guards. And they always come out with their music, what they call, on the Queen's birthday. All right? The Queen's birthday. And they come out with all the bands and all the different bands. Like you have at a parade on Fifth Avenue. Here we're talking about this type of collection of all different musical instruments. Very fascinating. Yeah.
Yeah. Is it a symphony?
Right. Look at these words. Psanterin, symphonite. Whether Eliezer Ben Yehuda, you know, made the...
No, but symphony is English.
Is English, yeah. And where that...
Symphonia is... Yeah,
it's symphonia, yeah. I mean, it's just so interesting, the language here.
Yeah.
I'm totally ignorant of this. I really don't know. And it's mashu, right? It really is. It's something to see. And Zmara, I mean, we recognize the word Zemer. But he says, when you hear this whole cacophony of sound, Tiflun... That's when you have to bow down. Right? At that moment, which Nebuchadnezzar, referring to himself, or he may be somebody announcing this on his behalf, that you bow down to the idol. So there's going to be this kind of cacophony of music, whatever it's going to be, and then everybody bow down. And, of course, there's a catch. Yeah. 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 It just keeps repeating. Yeah. It's almost mocking. It's mocking him, right? You know that Zabin Abba at the end is a kind of mockery if you think about it, making fun of it. You know that this little Nebuch, this little Gedi, and we keep going back to it. It's going over and over it again. So whoever put this together, we say the Anshe Knesset Gdolah, there was a little bit of. You know, okets, there's a bit of a shteche. It's an interesting thing, yeah. Alright, Vav. And of course, here's the catch. Uman di lo yipov yiskod, whoever does not bow down, right, you stand out from the crowd. Bashata yitremein, such a moment he will be raised up. In other words, this person will be arrested. Lego atunura yakidata. Yeah, be thrown in, or the romem, I don't know, something like that. He'll be chucked into this fiery furnace, all right? Because, you know, they always had a very active fiery furnace to bring punishments against people. Wow. Zion. Kol kabel dana be zimna. And what happened? Well, at that time, kad shamin kol amamaya, kol karna mashukita. Everybody, right, so they had a practice run, I guess. So they started making all of this cacophony of the musical keren, the horn, katros, savtacha, psantri, v'chozan, and zmar, and all these different sounds that came out. Naflin kol amamaya. Umaya v'lishnaya. Everybody got down and bowed down. Sogadin, they bowed down. Letzelen, dahava, to the image of gold. Di hekim Nebuchadnezzar Malka, which Nebuchadnezzar had established. Right. Now, kol kabel dina bezimno, karivu gavrin kastain, vachalu kartsem di yudoi. At that moment, of course, Nebuchadnezzar had his KGB had his people in the different places, and he wanted them to report if anyone did not bow down. So what happened was that there's a whole bunch of Chaldeans, Kazdain, who were faithful to Nebuchadnezzar, who came along and said there were a couple of Jews who didn't bow down. Wow. What are we going to do? And listen to this. Tet. Anu v'amrin. L'Nebuchadnezzar Malka. So they said to Nebuchadnezzar, Malka l'aminye. Firstly, long live the king. All right, you could never speak to him without actually giving him a blessing. And you, Ant Malka Samta Te'em. You, O king, you gave an order. You gave a rule. D'chol enash. Call anashim, right? Any man. D'yishma kol karanaya mashuktaya katros savtacha psantrin simpanaya. Chol zanin zmerah. Then they went through the whole list. When you hear all of these noises, yipol v'yisko d'tselem d'ava, you got to bow down. You told us this is what we got to do. And min di lo yipol v'yiskod, anyone who doesn't do it, yitrumei l'goatun nura yakirat, will be thrown into the fiery furnace. This is what you said. And we can tell you, itai gurin yudain. There's a couple of Jews over there. Di manit yathon al avidat medintabot medinabot. You made them into big shots, right? You know, the three men. Who's missing in the story? Daniel. Where is Daniel? You know, if we're going to do a massive Kiddush Hashem over here, then where is he? Where is Daniel?
He probably told him not to be there, so that the king felt that he would be saved.
And that's what the rabbis are prepared to say. It would be a tremendous insult to the king if Daniel was there, because he'd have to throw him into the... I've just made him the viceroy, and I'd have to kill him. Who? Nebuchadnezzar? I don't know if he actually would have believed that, but he certainly would have had to, you know, I made the rule, so I'd have to throw Daniel into the fire. It's unbelievable. And in fact, it turns out that Daniel was on vacation. He was out of the firing line. And it turned, and again, when all this was going on, actually it's not quite true. It seems to have been accessible. That there's a Midrashic text. We may not get through it this time. We maybe have to wait till after Pesach to tell you about it. And it seems that the three guys went to Daniel and said, what should we do? Should we bow down or should we not bow down? Because this rule was... I put it like this. It took time to get all the people to come. So one assumes there's been a bit of a break between the announcement and the first time everybody bows down. During that period, the three men went to Daniel and they said, what should we do? Should we bow down or not? He says, I don't know what to tell you. He said, it's strange, right? And he says, go and ask Yechezkel HaNovi. Yechezkel HaNovi was still alive. Ezekiel. So they went to Yechezkel and they wanted to know, if we don't bow down, is God going to save us from the fire? And he said, I don't know. I've got to ask God. Right? Unbelievable Midrash. So he had a conversation with God and he got the message back. No, God's not going to save you from the fire. All right? And of course, afterwards, Yechezkel and Daniel discuss it. And Yechezkel says, but God actually said to me to tell them that he won't, but he really will. All right? Why? Why? Because then the Kiddush Hashem, the act of Kiddush Hashem was going to be totally L'shem Shammai. Unbelievable Midrash. Unbelievable. So even if you know it's going to be okay in the end, you know, better not to tell the person. Amazing. So they shouldn't jump in with the kind of sense of magili. You know, I deserve the rescue operation. No. They went in and they felt that this was an act of devotion and they were prepared to die. It's unbelievable Midrash. Sorry? That's why the Midrash is always a bit of a stretch. But, you know, when you're dealing with Midrash, you always... It's a bit of elastic, right? And it does stretch occasionally. You're right. I felt Chesko coming in here was really quite a surprise. But I don't know. Maybe it was the Talmidim of Yechezkel. He presumably had Talmidim, right? So, you know, Ramosha's Talmidim. You still b'shem Ramosha. And everybody says things b'shem the Rav, even though, you know, did the Rav really say it? But it's b'shem the Rav. So, you know, that's the way it goes. Yeah.
Why was
Rashal
in the first place?
Yeah, you know, well, again, the whole thing here was that this was Avodah Zorah, that, you know, you're supposed to be prepared to die. So there was no question. The question was, their question was like this, that this is a tremendous Chil Hashem that's happening here. And if we are prepared to die for this, will a Kiddush Hashem come out of it? Because if they go in and they die, then it will just be more, literally, fuel to the fire, right? For Nebuchadnezzar to say, here they are, even the holy Jews, they jumped in and they couldn't, you know, I won. They lost. So I think this is what they were really upset about. Were they're going to be able to feel that out of this act of selflessness that they were about to commit, was there going to come out of it a Kiddush Hashem? And that's really what the sort of the rabbinic interpretation is really sort of revolving around. And this was their concern. Not for themselves, but for the greater awareness of the God of the world. Okay, and that's really what is very interesting. And it's the whole story is an amazing story. And there's a bit more to say, yeah.
There's another situation like this. Was it with Avraham Avinu?
And you're back to Avraham Avinu.
And they see what's going to happen to him. And he gets full.
Yeah.
The other ones that when they get killed, die, because they only did it because they thought they were also going to wait.
Yeah, yeah.
Was it Avraham?
Yeah,
Avraham,
I think, yeah. Yeah, brother. Well, that's it, the two brothers, and Avraham's brother thought he would get away with it, and he didn't, and he went in and he was killed. That's Lot's father, Nachor, so he died. Yeah, there's obviously a lot of precedent for this. We're dealing with a very, very difficult issue, the issue of Kiddush Hashem, which I don't want to dwell on too much, but I was thinking in terms of Haggadah, all right, one of the great acts of Kiddush Hashem, which really parallels this, or this parallels that, is the Midrashic Nachshon Ben Aminadab. All right, they're facing the Red Sea, and they've got the Egyptians behind, they've got the sea in front of them, and he says, come on guys, we're going to go in. And he goes up to his neck before the sea splits. And this is a Midrash, it's not in the Torah, but it's there to teach us a message that sometimes, we've just got to be prepared, to do what essentially is to prepare to die for the cause, but hopefully we won't. Right, we don't live in a world of martyrdom. We don't live in a world that being killed for the cause is one of the greatest things you could ever do. Chas v'shalom. Right, chai behem v'lo shiyamut behem. We believe in life, not in death. That's why we have the end of the Akedah is Yitzchak living, not dying. But the reality of all of this is that it's got to be about being prepared to. All right, being in a situation where you're prepared to do this, hopefully not having to do it. Or in this case, they obviously went through with it, and whatever will be, will be. It's a very difficult topic, and I've sort of got a lot of information which I've looked into over the last week, which it's a heavy topic. I want to get through the story. Listen to this. We've got a little bit more to go. Yud Gimel. So what happened? Bedaya Nebuchadnezzar birgaz v'chamas. So of course, Nebuchadnezzar was broigers, right? Same word. Very angry. Amar lahayta. The Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego, and he called them by their Persian names, by their Babylonian names. He called to that these three people should be brought. Baden Guvraya Ilech, and he ordered that these should be brought. Haitu Kadam Malka before the king. Arne Nebuchadnezzar Amalon, so he said to them, Chad Sta Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego, you three people, your Hadsta, Rashi says, you're making my decree into a joke. Because you didn't do it, right? You were dishonoring me. Leilo leilohid lo atechin polchin. You did not bow down to my God, meaning this image. So maybe it wasn't even an image of him. It was just an image of some avodah zara, an idol which they would worship in Babylon. Uletzelem dahava diakemet lo sagdin, and the golden image which I established, you didn't bow down to. So therefore, kan hein itechan atidin, in the future, what will happen to you now? Di beidana di tishmun kal karnaya, when you hear the sound again, he's giving them one more chance. Mashro kita katros savtachab santrin sumpanaya cholzan ezmar, when you hear it again, tiflum v'tiskudun, you have to bow down, I'm insisting you do it. Letzalma de avedis, to the image which I made. Vehein lo tiska, if you don't, beishata, that moment, titramun legoi atun nura yikidata, you'll be thrown into the fiery furnace. Uminhu, umanhu elo di yitashez vinchun min yodi. And who is the God who can save you? In other words, I am totally powerful and nothing will save you from my hand. Wow. This guy is so full of himself, it's really quite scary. And Ted Zion, Ano Shadrach Meshach V'Abednego, one of the great speeches in the Bible, which nobody ever reads. They turned around and they said, V'yamrin l'malka Nebuchadnezzar, they said to Nebuchadnezzar, Lo hashchin anachna, we don't care, al dana pitgam l'ha tavutach. Right, whatever you've just said to us is absolutely zero in our eyes. Hey, Nitai, Elohana, Dianachna, Balchim. We have our God that we serve. Yachil Leshezavusana. He can save us. He can come to our rescue. All right. Not obviously according to the Midrash, they weren't being told whether he would or not. But this was the bravado that they had to put up to match Nebuchadnezzar. Minatun Nura Nakidata. He'll save us from this fiery furnace. Min Yadach Malki Sheziv, and from the hand of you, O King. Vehein Lo Yadia Lehevile La Malka. And if not, you should know, O King, Dile Lahoch, Lo Itana Pachim, we're never going to bow to your God. Ulatselem, Dahava, Diakem, Lo Nisgod, we're never going to bow to the image. So they are saying, under any circumstance, we are prepared to die for our faith. Wow. And what happened, and this is such a great story, and it's amazing. I'm just very excited about this. Yutet. Ba'adaya Nebuchadnezzar hit Melichama. So of course, this got Nebuchadnezzar even more upset. More angry, let's put it that way. Utsalem an poi ishtana. And it says that his features changed. Basically, he got more angry, more hot under the collar. Al Shadrach Meshach v'Abednego, and he got very angry with them. Oneva Amar, and he said, Lemeze la tuna. He said that you've got to heat up the furnace. Chad Shiva al di chazel lemazia. Seven times hotter than it normally is. Right? Seven. Seven is always nature. It's always teva. I don't know whether anybody says that here, but the idea is seven was for him significant. You know, it's getting it to the hottest natural heat, right? Beyond that, to the hottest level that we can ever get it to, right? Without sort of, I suppose, you know, destroying the whole thing. And it even gives you a bit of a reaction to this. And he had these soldiers who had to bring these three korbanot, these three poor guys, to the fiery furnace. It was so hot. Amar lekafosa, he said, you've got to bind up the prisoners, the Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, you've got to bind them up. Lemirma latun nuri, you kids had thrown them into the fire. And when they were getting near to the fire, it was so hot that the guards were burnt to shreds because they couldn't come near. They came too close. They got burnt. The three Jews that were there in the fire stayed perfectly safe. It's an unbelievable story. And we'll say a little bit of Midrash at the end. But I don't know, was it worth coming out on a rainy evening to hear this? This is 2-1. I hope it was. Now, while they were walking, these men, Kafisu Basar Balehom Patshem, they're wearing their various clothes, right? It points out that nothing was singed, not even their clothing, nothing. Karbulosa, and they had whatever karbul is, their pants, their trousers, the vusheon, other garments, their robes, uramiv, lego, atunura, yakinaz, they were thrown into the fiery furnace, completely decked out in whatever clothing they were wearing. And kafbep, kol kabel dana, mindi melad malka mechatzva, and the word of the king was followed, viatuna zeyatira, guvraya, ilain. And what happened was the furnace was heated so hot that these people, the Asiku, Lashadra, Meshach, and Abednego, brought the three prisoners, Katil, Abimod, Shavivo, Dinura, they were killed by the flames. Because it was so hot, you know, you got so close to the... I mean, I'm thinking of baking mutters, you know, we're going through that period of the year. And thank God those ovens are not that hot, but got to be careful, you know, if the flame can shoot out. That's why you've got to be very, very careful about this whole operation. And here, clearly, the flames were shooting up. So the three prisoners were taken into the door of the furnace. It was open. And then the flames shot out because it was so hot that the guards were killed instantly. And this must have been a big, big shock. The Gavraya, Ilech, Talatin, Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego, those three gentlemen, Naflu, Lagoa, Tunura, Yekidita, Makaftin, and they fell in. Bound, they weren't. Didn't even undo their chains or whatever they were bound. The ropes. They went straight in. And Adai Nebuchadnezzar Malka Teveva Kam Behit Balah. At this point, Nebuchadnezzar was walking around very, very bewildered because he saw that they weren't dying. Aneva Amal Lahav Lahadav Roy. So what did he do? He said to some of his leaders, "Hallo Gavrin Talata, these three men." Remain a lagonura makafte. We throw them in with their bonds, with their ropes. Onyanva Amrin Lamalka Yitziva Malka, and they said, yes, it's true, O king, that we were thrown in with their ropes. Aneva Amar Hanach Hazay Gavrin Arba Shrayan Malchim Begov Nura. This is famous. He actually saw four people in they had like, I suppose, a kind of window or whatever, they could look in, and there were four people walking around. So who's the fourth guy? Doesn't tell you. So there's a whole midrashic text. It turns out it was one of the sarim, one of the angels. And there's a big discussion. It says that the angel of Barad, the angel of hail, came to God and said, I can come down and put out the whole fire. All right, let's have a hailstorm and we'll extinguish the flames. So Hashem said, no, that's not the way, this is not the way it works. Because we're going to show him that we're not dealing with a natural situation here. So who went into the Aish? The Sar Ha'esh, the angel of fire, went into the fire to keep protection of the people in the fire. That's an incredible statement. These midrashim are wild. It turns out that what the fourth person or the fourth image that he saw walking around was the angel of Aish. Right? We talk about it on the Hashanah. So when we walk around, we talk about, there's a whole Hashanah there about Aish. And it talks about the Sar Ha'esh, if I'm not mistaken. If you look there, I think it gives you the name. And this is kind of very, as I said, very difficult stuff. But the idea was that, you know, within the fire, there was far extra fire in order to even make the situation even more intense and the miracle even more incredible. And this is what it says over here, because Nebuchadnezzar was just totally overwhelmed by this, and he said, I saw four images in that. But go, Nura, back to the pasuk. V'chaval lo itai behon. And none of them was there any wound? There was no chabalim. There was no wound on them. V'reve di revia demet lebar Elohim. And the fourth one looked like an angel. He admitted the fourth image to him was nothing more, nothing less than bar Elohim, which is interesting because this is a phrase that we actually have in the when we take out the Sefer Torah, Brik Shemay, lo bar Elohim, right? It's an expression that we use in the Brik Shemay. And Bar Elohim means, and it's translated quite correctly from here, this is where it comes in, it refers to an angel. Literally means a son of God, which is a fascinating statement because you can get very Christological about this, and the fact is we're not. We're talking about Bar Elohim, meaning actually an angel, meaning something that God has created with for a purpose. As we know, the angel fulfills its purpose, and that's it, it's gone. Again, just a little side note about that, but that's an interesting thing. Kav Vav, listen to this. So, Ba'adayin Karav Nebuchadnezzar Litra, so Nebuchadnezzar was just blown away by this. So he goes near to the gate, Atun Nura, Yekidata of the burning cauldron, whatever, Oneva Amar, and at this he calls out. And he says to these three men, Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego, Avdoi Di Allah Eloha Iloh, you are the servants of the Most High God. Finally, he's recognizing that he is not number one, right? And there is a God of gods above him. And he says to them, Puku v'atu, come out. Badayin nafkin, and while they were coming out, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, Mingo, Nura, they came out from the flame. Come out. And they came. And at this point, Kavzayim, Mitkanshin, Achashtar Panaya, Signaya, Pachvosa, and of course it turned out to a tremendous Kiddush Hashem. And what happened was that as soon as they all came out, all of the people gathered around, all of the officers of the countries, Vahadovre Malka, all of his own leaders, Chazian, Lugavraya, Elaine, they saw the man, Dilo Shalat Nura, Begeshmeh, nothing had affected their bodies, Usa'ar Reshean Lo Itarech, not even a whisker, nothing had been singed, right? You go to the barber, he always singes something, or used to. Now, nothing. Usar Balein, Lo Shanua, nothing on their clothes. Vereach Nur, Lo Adabban, they didn't have a smell of burning. All right, now how do you manage that? And again, this is the imagery here is very powerful. And the ropes, I guess that.
It says actually, it says that. You know, if we could go out, so it has to. The Chavalo Itai Behon. It says that when he saw them, he says that when he saw him inside the furnace, it said. I saw him without the chains.
Yeah.
Somehow they just
it seems they might have just got burnt up. I mean, if it's... or melted.
There's no chains.
So they already got destroyed in the inside.
Yeah, so this is what
yeah. So he says that. Very interesting. Yeah, he says that. Wow. Okay. All right. I mean, again, if it was metal in that sort of heat, it would have melted.
Yeah,
I mean,
that's,
yeah,
it just yeah. disappeared.
Yeah, it just disappeared. Interesting. Kavchet, listen to this. This is a great chat. I mean, wow. I don't know. You go home after this. I don't know if you can get to sleep. I can't sleep after this stuff. Kavchet, so what happened at the end? Nebuchadnezzar Amar, at this point, even Nebuchadnezzar has to make a statement, and he says, Baruch Elohim, Dishadah Meshach Abednego, blessed is the God of these three men, Dishalach Malachi, sent his angel, V'sheziv Lavdoi, to rescue his servants, Di Hitrechitsu Aloi, the ones who went away from my command, Umilat Malka Shanim, they changed, L'shanot, right? They changed the word of the king, V'yahavu Gashmeon, and they gave their bodies, D'ilo Yifechun V'lo Yiskudun, L'chol Elo Lahein Ole Lahein, they would not bow to any other god except their own god. And at this point, of course, what does he do? He's got to recognize them. As he recognized Daniel, he's got to recognize them. Umini sim to aim. At this point, he makes an order. To aim is an interesting word. Mon Hebrew, or in Hebrew generally, ta'am is a reason or a taste, but in the Aramaic here, it means some sort of order. Dikol am umma velishon, to every in every language, so right through the kingdom. Diyamar shalu al Elohon, that if anyone speaks negatively, all right, so how he's changed, wow. If anyone says anything bad about the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, Hadamim yit'abei, this person will be killed, literally be torn limb from limb, Ubeite nevali yishtavei, you know, this is one of his favorite phrases, and his house will be made into a donkey, basically everything will be destroyed. Kol kaber delo iti elo acharin, because there really is no other God, who can save in this way. So in the end, Nebuchadnezzar comes to a dramatic awareness. Now, this again is one of the issues, I think, which we talk about on Pesach, the question of change. All right, you know, change is all very good when you have a revelation like this. Am Yisrael, you know, the famous story, Hashem Elokim, that they with Eliyahu Navi, you know, they see the fire come down from heaven, and the... Elio vanquishes the prophets of Baal, and God is Hashem Elokim, something that they say over and over again. We say it on Yom Kippur, and in the next chapter they're back to square one. Back to square one. The idea of change for Nebuchadnezzar to say this in public was an incredible thing. But is he really going to change? He's going to have to go through some sort of personal event, which is really going to be the next chapter. Something's going to happen to him in his life which will cause him to really internalize, right? To put into his own existence what he is recognizing from the outside. And this again is so interesting, the development of this story. We just finished the chapter. Lama. At this point, the king made them made a rule about these three men that they would become very powerful in the kingdom of Babylon. Nebuchadnezzar, Malka l'chol ha'maya, and Nebuchadnezzar said to all of the people, Maya l'shnaya, and all of the languages and people who were there, Didarin b'chol ara, Shalom chon yiskei, he said to them, may you have great peace, Ataya v'timhaya diavad imi, that the incredible signs that were done with me, El Eloi Eloi, this great God, Shafar Kodamai Lachvaya is, I have to repeat. Alright? This is again language that we recognize. I said from the Zemirot, we use these words. Isoi Otoi Kamor Rav Ravin, how great are these wonders, Vatimhoi Kamatakivin, how strong are these incredible signs, Malchute Malchut Olam, Malchutcha Malchut Kol Olamim, almost like Dovid HaMelech, right? Your kingdom is an everlasting kingdom, Sholtona Im Dovido, Malchutcha Malchut Kol Olamim, and Shaltucha B'chol Dovido, almost the same language forever and ever. Right, if you can't get excited about a perek like that, I don't know what's going to turn you on, I really do not know. This is above and beyond. I'm going to leave it at this because, as I said, there is so much to discuss. There's a lot of philosophical issues, the issue of Kiddush Hashem. I mean, the basic thing about Kiddush Hashem is something that we say we've got to be, have it in our, you know, in our data. It's sort of got to be something that, if we have to, God forbid, we ever get to that moment in life, we've got to be prepared for it. But at the same time, it's not something that we go and look for. We really don't. But there are so many stories, so many incredible stories of people who sort of given their lives for Am Yisrael. All right, I'm always reminded of this soldier, the one who died in one of the wars recently. guy called Roy Klein, who's very well known in Israel, his whole unit was surrounded, and they threw a hand grenade into the group of soldiers, and he fell on the grenade, said Shema Yisrael, and basically took the explosion himself, and all the soldiers survived. And this is something, it's a split-second decision. But Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, these are the guys who give us the chizuk, like Avraham Avinu, like people of that caliber, that in Jewish history, you know, we saw that they were prepared to go to that extreme. It's something that obviously we're not hopefully ever want to, or ever hopefully going to experience, but at the same time, it's part of our tradition, it's part of our Jewishness, it's part of who we are. And even Nebuchadnezzar has to get down on the floor and recognize it. If you want to do a bit of holiday reading, just read the next chapter, it will blow your mind. What happens to Nebuchadnezzar at this point is totally wild. I mean, it is wild, literally. Right? He completely loses it. He's everything about him, his whole world has collapsed. The human world around him, so he goes to the animal world. And you'll see what I mean. If you read the next chapter, Bezrat Hashem will continue. I hope that we'll have at least another two or three shiurim after Pesach. We'll start again, please God, on April, 28th? 28th, Monday, after Yom Tov. And in the meantime, wish everybody Chag Kosher V'Sameach, a very happy and kosher Yom Tov. Thank you, everybody. Erev Tov. Chag Sameach.